I want to talk about imagining the impossible. Because it's very hard for us to imagine things. Because we've grown up, most of us, in a country that became more and more unequal. And inequality harms the imagination, amongst the many other things that it does. Americans are terrible at imagining that America could be different. You just tell them you don't have to have the worst poverty rates in the Western world, and the person they say is, "That's great here, what do you mean we've got those?" You don't tell American undergraduates that the American health system is awful. What you do if you're lecturing in the United States is you send the undergraduates to the library to write an essay about why America has the best health in the world, which they believe, and then they will slowly murmur. Americans have the worst imaginations. Unfortunately, we have the second worst. This is probably not why we're in the mess we're in. I teach young people at my university who have had the imagination examined out of them from 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. They know the A-level syllabus is inside out, but parts of your brain die when you get too many A stars. I learned this when I started lecturing in Oxford 5 years ago, when I said, "This is great, let's do a course where you go and read things and you won't be able to predict the exam so we can have some fun." And I got more complaints than I've ever had in my life about my, because they wanted to know what was going to be in the exam. I'm going to talk to you about two books briefly, neither of which you can get, because Peak Inequality is published next month, and it's an optimistic book that says the impossible has already happened, we are actually over the hump, it's beginning to get better. And the other one, The Equality Effect, is the only book that isn't actually out there. And I'm going to show you 18 slides from The Equality Effect, mainly cartoons, because otherwise you're going to get graphed out, and then six from Peak Inequality. I wonder how you react to Boris. This is a slide of Boris from this week, laughing at Jeremy Corbyn's joke about his boss. We're in a very, very strange time. We really are. Most times, of course, are not strange. They can't be strange. Strange times have to be rare. But we are in a remarkably strange time. So how did that man get to be sitting there as Foreign Secretary? Only an incredibly unequal country could actually produce that situation. It is not his fault. It really isn't his fault. I blame his family, I blame his school, I blame his college that he was sent to. It was a narcissism machine designed to create people like that. Inequality grows to the extremes. We have the most unequal society in Europe, the highest Gini coefficient of income inequality, because we are least able to control the narcissistic and the greedy. And hence we end up with them sitting on the green benches. Just one slide for you, just in case you're sitting comfortably. How many people are venting, either privately or social venting? Stick your hands up. Okay, so that's maybe a seventh or an eighth of the audience. How many have got a mortgage? At least double that number, so perhaps about 2/7. How many of you own outright? Okay, well, not as many. Some of you have put your hands up. Not all cooperatives. Okay, for those of you who own outright, who maybe, obviously you care, you've got up, you've come here, but, you know, in some ways you're sitting pretty, you don't have to pay for your housing and so on. What that little graph from The Guardian in the last few weeks is showing you is the collapse, recent collapse of mortgage lending from nationwide. There is a mushroom cloud coming out of London. It's hit Oxford and Cambridge. We don't like to talk about it, but the prices are going down. You are not immune, even if you're sitting in the Vale of York in a nice cottage, because there isn't somebody to buy it from you the way we have established British society. Giving most of our young people who go to university, which is half of all young women, a debt of £50,000 to £60,000 to £100,000, so that when they hit their early 30s and have children, they cannot buy your family house in York, is going to affect your institutions as well. Some cartoons, it can seem pretty awful. This is an average, boring investment banker after paying tax, and how much more we think this young man is worth compared to those other people. Oxfam did a very good job at this kind of thing. The interesting thing is they used exactly the same statistics as were used by banks, talking about the advantage of having wealthy people. Oxfam were punished for being too successful at actually highlighting the very riches on the planet taking so much. Inequality goes up and down over time. Thomas Piketty is wrong in saying that the last century was an aberration. It actually goes up and down over history. One problem is that the unequal societies are the ones that tend to leave monuments behind them. India's had some remarkably equitable societies in the very distant past, but we barely know about it because you don't build big things when you're not having a slave society. And as Kate said, this is the kind of atmosphere that you're in. It isn't helpful at all. Being told that unless you buy and purchase, you are not a proper human being. I live near Bicester Village. You may not, you've got an outlet centre near here, but nothing like our outlet centre in the village. People fly in from China in large numbers. They fly in because the Chinese have an incredibly progressive system of VAT, which goes up. The more you don't need something, like a designer dress, the higher is the consumption tax on it. If you want a fancy computer, it costs far more in China than here, even though it's made in China. There's a subtle way of dealing with inequality in China. The problem is the rich in China has sussed it out and worked out it is worth getting on a plane from China and getting on a train from London and going to Bicester and buying the things that they can't buy for the same price in China and flying all the way back to China. Because at the moment, the Chinese are fooled by this. But China's changed a lot only recently. We're going to be stuck on that. Well, there we go. Moving forward. Just a few cartoons about the global situation and the level of ridiculousness. I put that up. These cartoons, by the way, are done by Elephonis, I should say. You very kindly helps illustrate my books so they're not too dull. I went to a conference of bankers once in Hong Kong, and Jesse James was there, seeing it's all about money. And the keynote speaker was Arnie Schwarzenegger. And you may not know this about Arnie, but Arnie's big area of expertise is real estate in California and how many apartments you can buy if you want to become very rich as a landlord. Let's see the fourth one there. And the ridiculousness of buying bottled water from, you know, it might seem that the world is going to hell in a handcart. You know, this is the kind of thing that saps your imagination. It's getting worse and worse, the planet's burning up, we're being more and more stupid. You know, it is just ridiculous. And like, you can get yourself into a hole of depression. And what I want to do in the remaining 7.5 minutes I've got is try to get you out of that hole of depression. You know, we are working out. I've only worked this out relatively recently. I have a constant argument with Richard Wilkinson about this, over why can't people get it about climate change. When I was at school, I was taught in my geography lessons about the ice age that was about to come. When I went to university, my physical geography tutors used to go to the Alps every summer to climb up to measure the glaciers to see how fast they were coming down the mountain. They thought they were making mistakes with their measurements. It took them several years to realise that these things were going back. I am not that old. We have only... You're an audience where at least half of you are going to say, I'm not that old. We need to be more imaginative about giving people enough time to understand things that are changing. We need to eat less meat. But luckily, meat isn't particularly good for us. You know, we will begin to work out how to eat less meat. We currently have a sea in Europe in which people drive their luxury yachts around at high speed. You can go. My particular hobby when I was younger was to go to these various ports where the super rich have their yachts and take a blow up rubber dinghy and go out. And if you have a bucket full of sand and a rope, you can moor your rubber dinghy next to their yacht and have the same experience that they have. I just advise it's worth trying. But there's a catastrophe going on across the Mediterranean now, and you can look at that and say, what's on earth going to happen? We're going to get climate change refugees in huge numbers in the future. It's terrible. Peak baby was 1990 in the world. We're at peak 28-year-old now. We will get to see the value of human beings in the future rapidly rise as we get relatively less young people. And part of what is going on in Europe, part of why Germany has allowed 1 million Syrians in, is because since the 1960s we have not been reproducing ourselves, and we're never going to reproduce ourselves in our numbers again. It turns out that no matter what pro-natalist policies you have, if you give women enough freedom, on average they decide they want slightly less than 2 children each. This is incredibly good news for the planet. But bad things are going on in America, and we struggle to see how it could get better. When people complain or riot or try to stop the G8 making stupid decisions, they just move to more and more remote locations in Canada to try and get away from the mass riots of the protesters who are saying it's bad. And we look at our streets and we see homeless people rising in number and penthouses on the top of the skyscrapers. And I do talks in school. I did a little talk in a school in Winchester recently where I was talking about homelessness. And one boy, 18-year-old boy, said to me, but there's always been homeless people, there always will be homeless people. And I suddenly realised that in his lifetime he'd only ever see people sleeping on the streets in Winchester. And his school costs £30,000 a year to go to. But he didn't have the imagination to see it was possible not to have people sleeping on the streets in Winchester. I'm lucky enough to be old enough to remember people not sleeping on the streets. And I'm lucky enough to go to other countries where people don't have to sleep on the streets. This was the number plate of Rich Ritchie. Rich Ritchie was the lesser known banker to Bob Diamond. They were now both long gone. Bob had to go off to the States. One of the peaks that we've passed, and we're passing many peaks, is the peak of income inequality. Income inequality for the bottom 90% actually peaked in 1990. But that didn't matter because the top 10% of us, which would be most people in this room, carried on taking a bigger and bigger share. It wasn't until around about 2012-13, 2014 that the 10th and the 1% peaked. That's around about 14-15% of all income, an enormous amount. You can get several NHSs for just getting our 1% to take the same as they're taking Norway. But even when the 1% went down, the 0.1% was still going up after that, so it was still bad. It wasn't until 2 years ago that the incomes of the top CEOs in Britain actually fell, for the first time in my lifetime, by about £1 million. And it wasn't until a few months ago that the highest paid man in the country stopped being the highest paid man in the country, who is the lovely, wonderful Martin Sobel, who left under somewhat of a cloud from WPP, one of the world's largest advertising firms. And I predict we will not see another person being paid as much as Martin Sobel again. The peak doesn't feel good. The last peak was 1913 in income inequality. I'm afraid the bad news about peaking is that you have 2 decades or 3 decades of things slowly getting more equal, where it feels absolutely awful, because it is awful. The only quick road to greater equality is an absolute disaster, like losing a war. Nobody's managed a quick route to inequality that hasn't involved something like that. But I think we're over the top of it. And we're past these kind of days. We're going to have to go forward fast. And we talk about now how we can arrange things so that we're not a kind of concrete jungle of cars. And we talk about our education system now so that we're not having schools which are exam factories. And we're beginning to realise that we're the most segregated country in Europe when it comes to our children. The children in Oxford do not meet each other. A third go to private schools. Oh, it is an unbelievably divided city. Some graphs. This graph shows you the range of possibilities. The majority of countries in the world, by the way, are getting more equal now, which in the course is falling. This is the amount of money GDP spent on public services in various countries. Ignore the crash in the middle, don't worry about Ireland too much. But have a look at what they do in Finland, or France, or Germany, or almost everywhere else. There are ways to get a well-funded health service, a well-funded education service, decent housing. Just not our way, we're down there. The Labour Party manifesto of June last year suggested spending that was costed at moving that 36% to 37, or maybe 37.5%. That's the extent of our imagination. That's as far as we can possibly imagine things, and even that is unimaginable. You know, Jeremy Corbyn as Prime Minister, that won't happen. But all you're actually asking for is to move that thing up a tiny amount. Fraser Nelson, my favourite man in Britain. Fraser Nelson tweeted on the night of the election as well. It's a fascinating election. It's about the impossible happening. The swing, as traditionally measured, was the largest swing since 1945. You don't want to forget this. This was impossible. Theresa was told, you have to call the election. Nobody has ever lost an election for this position in the opinion polls. And that advice was true. That swing is actually much bigger than 1945, because 1945 occurred over 10 years, not over two. The Conservative vote did increase. The Labour vote increased even more. Ed Miliband, bless him. You know, Ed managed to get a tiny little positive swing. In the record of Labour leaders, that is good, but it was just prophetic, but good. Brown, terrible, negative swing. Blair, awful. Negative, negative. You might say, well, look how well Blair did in 1997. How many years of Conservative rule have we had before 1997? But your imagination has been sucked out of you, and you've been told that he was a wonderful, charismatic leader who was ever more popular, if you don't look at the numbers. Last complicated graph. So what these graphs are, the up and down scale, the y-axis, is the proportion of people in the polls who say they will vote Labour when you average a whole month of polls. Polls are great, they're not random, they're fine, you just need to average them. And the x-axis is the speed at which the voting is changing. And that line that goes up May to June on the edge there is the fastest change in public opinion we have ever had in Britain since polling began. And I've drawn hundreds of these graphs for the parties. That's never happened before. I've updated it. Okay, it loops around, but it's forming a new kind of thing up there around about 40%. The impossible happened last year. The impossible keeps on happening. The bosses are not taking more anymore. Very last graph is the segregation index of Conservative voters. The point of putting it up is that something else happened in 2017. For the first time since 1974, Britain became slightly less segregated in terms of whether you vote Conservative or Labour by where you live. Until 2015, the Tory areas were becoming more and more and more Tory, but that broke in 2017. There always has to be a peak of inequality. It cannot ever carry on rising forever anywhere. In a way, it is trivially easy to call it when you're at the most unequal and the most unequal society. Brexit, by the way, might just be the kind of disaster that we need to ensure that this thing carries on. Because it's really going to hurt the rich very badly, hence the house prices falling in London. And Brexit, for whatever else you might think about it, is much better than a war, which is the way it happened last time. This is your choice of societies. All societies are unequal. The question is, what extent of inequality are you willing to put up with? And on that sharply curved ladder, nobody is happy, because at the very top it is very scary to be there, because the fall down is bad. Maybe they're looking a bit too happy on the other ladder. People in more equal societies, as Kate said, are more likely to say that they're not better looking than average, that they're not better drivers than average, that they're not better at school than others. You wouldn't believe the American students I get who tell me just how incredibly clever they all are, because they were told that at school, endlessly. But people in more equal societies can also be a little bit more morose, not quite as kind of upbeat. But that's because we have to be upbeat here to get through the day and to manage to do it. That isn't necessarily a brilliant thing. It is just what's required in a very unequal society to end up talking in front of a set of people in a room at the University of York. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Danny. So, Danny's talk reminded me of that famous piece of graffiti that appeared on a wall in Paris during the events of May 68. Be realistic, demand the impossible.